Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Da 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 Adam Crowley.
We just chased Adam Crowley down the hall singing the Pit Fight song. He didn't like it.
He didn't like that one bit, did he, Bob?
No, but he's a good sport about it.
He's a great sport. You missed it, Limits. We chased Crowley down the hallway singing this song.
Was he all dejected and depressed?
He was rather good-natured about it, yeah.
But I thought he would be, given the way they lost that game. My goodness.
Oh, my God.
I think
how does
just
Neil Brown still have a job? How does he have a job? He's played 15 games against top 15 teams. How many of those has he won?
None.
Bob?
One.
One against number 15 Virginia Tech, as Crowley adroitly pointed out in the hallway. I thought it was none. And they were ranked 15th. So how many teams above number 15 has he ever beaten? Has he ever beaten since he got there?
None.
Crowley?
None.
I mean, Limits? None. Bob, what is happening here? He beat nobody last year. They went 8-4 in the regular season. Who cares? They didn't beat anybody. They stink. I asked my nephew Danny, who I tried to hook up on a FaceTime with Crowley before the game because I thought they would bond. Danny's a WVU grad and just an avid supporter of West Virginia. And I asked him before the game, what's Neil Brown's signature win? It's not like he's been there for 10 minutes. He's been there for six years, and he couldn't think of one. I said, that's sort of instructive. And then he gave me Army in a bowl game. I said, I love the Army as much as the next person, but if that's your signature win on the football field in 6 years as a head coach, why are you still coaching there? I don't know why I'm starting with this today, other than we were all taking great joy in Crowley's pain.
Yeah, and because it was the most exciting game of the weekend, too.
Was a great game.
This is why the atmosphere, the pregame, postgame, during the game, all of it is why rivalries are very, very important and should be protected. You can't play this game about, oh, we'll do it for 4 years, take a break. No. It should be made mandatory by somebody in these schools. Come to an agreement, say we have to play.
It should I was going to say Pitt Penn State. That should be made mandatory by the state politicians on the grounds that it's good for the state of Pennsylvania.
It is.
So play the damn game.
Yeah. Enough of this. Well, we can't fit you in because we have we get 108,000 every game. It doesn't matter. It does matter.
Were you at the game the other day?
I was at it for a little bit, yes.
Was the place packed to the gills or less than that?
I think it was packed to the gills. Okay. I was looking around, but I mean, regardless, the atmosphere was very intense.
Yes,
I mean, it was
unbelievable.
Years ago was the best atmosphere, I thought, for that game where Devonshire made an interception late and they pulled that thing out.
Yeah, it's a type of game, Bob, and I used to argue with Ron about this, that even if you lose, you want to have, especially as a student fan, you want to go there for weeks like this, for days like that, games you remember, honestly, win or lose. You remember win or lose. It was a great game, a great atmosphere. Ron always said that the fans just want to win. They want to be. I said, okay, so let's take this to the extreme. You play Youngstown State 12 times. Is that what your fans want? And then you go 12-0.
Right.
You know, or do you want weeks where there's a huge buildup, where everybody's excited, where there's a real party about a real game, and then you watch a game like that? That's why what you said is true. Rivalries make the experience for all fans, but I think especially for students. You want that. You want Pitt Penn State. You want these games, win or lose. You want to have this in college sports, and it's a crying shame, and shame on all of them, that this rivalry was discontinued, that it will be again soon, and then they'll continue it again. Play the game every year. Play Pitt Penn State every single year. Both.
Yeah.
It's not a crime to have both on the schedule, but at least play one every single season.
An athletic director should get over this, we're bigger than you, we don't need you attitude, if some of them have that, or whatever the case may be.
Well, that's Penn State toward Pitt, and that's Pitt toward West Virginia.
Right. All of it has to change. It has to be one-on-one, You have a series, you alternate years. Simple as that. I used to love it when it was at Thanksgiving. Penn State was at Thanksgiving.
Yes.
It was one of those games that, again, when you're at home eating turkey, tryptophan is making you tired, you'd get up for that game because you knew it was coming. Penn State. So that was part of your Thanksgiving holiday. All of these traditions have gone, which is why, I hate the way college athletics is going with all these conference realignments. Year after year, it changes. You don't know what a rivalry is or isn't. Young people come into it, have no appreciation for what was and what should be again. And these athletic directors need to get to a table and just leave your egos aside.
And sit politicians, down and say, Bob, in certain instances. That's what happened in other states.
I get it.
There are other rivalries that have been kept alive by the state politicians saying, yeah, you're going to play that game.
And but I'm of the belief the politicians have enough stuff to worry about.
No, they're worried about crap. Bob, politicians, they spend half their days worried about crap that doesn't matter anyway.
Well,
let them spend 10 minutes telling these schools to play football.
It shouldn't even come to that, Joe. It shouldn't come to that. It should come to these athletic directors get together, sit down and say, hey, listen, for the sake of the rivalry for these schools, for these students, we're trying to make their experience something special. This is a big part of why they come here.
And in some cases, we're giving you money. So guess what? You won't get any unless you play the damn game.
Well,
I'm sorry, Bob. We'll get back to that later. Thank you, City Limits. I mean, we were excited because we were, well, frankly, taunting Crowley. They could have thrown a flag on us even before the show.
That's unfortunate.
accidentally let off there. But I'm going to lead off with something positive about the Steelers. I hear you out there. They've won two road games. There's plenty to talk about that's not positive. There is, including this idea of, why are people so negative about a 2-0 team? You know why. We all know why. We'll get to that. I'm going to start positive today. When I think to reasons why the Steelers could break their epic playoff win drought, okay? They haven't won a playoff game since,
2016?
Was it Mike Mitchell? Since Artie Burns was roaming their secondary with Mike Mitchell, it was a million years ago. It wasn't 7 years ago. In football years, it was a million years ago since they've won a playoff game.
Since Moby Dick was a minnow.
Yes, since Malzi had hair. It's ridiculous, really. It's embarrassing that they haven't won a playoff game in that long. We talk about droughts in the AFC. We talk about the Jets, Dolphins, and Steelers. Maybe another team thrown in there that I'm forgetting. Raiders, maybe? I don't know. So it's embarrassing. But when I think of why they could win one this year, Bob, I start with this defense. Yeah, we're going to talk quarterbacks. We're going to talk everything. But let's talk about defense for a little while. This has a chance, if it stays healthy, and if it doesn't get worn down from doing all the work like in previous years, this has a chance to be a great defense. I know the tests maybe haven't been, of the highest level so far. But if they stay healthy, Cam looks to be back. He looked great yesterday. I like the defensive line. Everybody loves the linebackers. The inside linebackers have been a little quiet. So what? Sometimes that means you're not blowing assignments. If you're not noticeable, that can be a good thing. And the new additions in the secondary look pretty good to me to go along with Joey Porter Jr., who I think is going to be a star, and Minka, who already is one. The defense, when healthy, was good enough to have great seasons these last 2-3 years. We saw that early in the year when they broke Josh Allen in half, when they pounded Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. But the offense was so laughably inept, never putting the defense in a good position where you could just peel back and go. You're up 2 touchdowns. That's when it gets real fun on defense. Or you have an offense that can keep your defense off the field with lengthy drives. And the offense around here did nothing to help a defense that has worn down every year, plus injuries. But I'm here to start today with the number one reason why I think the Steelers could win a playoff game, actually win one this year, is a really, really good and possibly great defense. They just need a little help.
Totally agree. But so far in two games, we've seen the exact sort of game we've seen in the past, which is the defense does its job and the offense kind of just lets the other team hang around, no matter how good the defense has been. And that will be the thing that needs to change as time goes on. But yes, health, and that's a big, 17 games, soon to be 18 games. The war of attrition begins. And if you're thinking there's going to be no injury to significant players, think again, because there always is one or two of them. Don't know which.
Well, maybe not this year. Maybe if you could pick three guys to stay healthy on defense, who would they be? TJ, obviously.
Watt, Minka, and Joey Porter Jr., I would say.
Yeah,
I
mean, maybe.
I mean, you can make an argument for the inside linebackers or defensive line because you don't know exactly
what
the backup.
Ty Smith you could make an argument for.
Yeah, but you got Herbig over there ready to play. So I think there are – point is, if they stay healthy, you're right. They'll keep the Steelers in the game. However, the Steeler offense, which is still a big concern, has scored one touchdown in eight quarters.
Yeah.
You cannot function in the National Football League with one touchdown in eight quarters. Now, they've been fortunate because they played two teams that have been offensively challenged. Kirk Cousins couldn't move. They knew that. The way he threw, I had no idea how he was going to play in that game because I hadn't seen him. The whole preseason didn't play. But you could tell he favored his leg, and he threw, trying to protect it, made bad decisions. He normally doesn't do that. They took full advantage of it. They knew what to expect, and that was that. Yesterday, they knew also what to expect. A young quarterback who is going to have some growing pains.
Yeah.
But what was encouraging yesterday, I thought they're going to blitz a lot more. They blitz here and there, not much. They still relied on a four-man front. So their defense can do it in a multiple formation way. But the offense has got to be. But you can't just rely on Boswell and field position, and that's it. You got to score touchdowns.
No doubt.
And no have you doubt seen evidence? That. Have you seen evidence to make you think that maybe they're going to be a better offense? I think I can say that. But there's still hope involved. It's not like it's a sure thing.
Oh, believe me, we're going to dive into that head first in a little bit. But I wanted to start positive today, Bob.
Well, that's positive.
You're undercutting my positivity.
No, I'm not. I'm saying I agree with you.
This defense, I don't think, when healthy, has a weakness. Maybe some depth issues here and there. Everybody has that. It's the NFL. Ogunjobi has come to play early in the season. I think Benton's going to get better. I thought he would start off a little more spectacularly. I think he's going to be really good. Cam being healthy and looking like Cam, I thought yesterday, is gigantic. The outside linebackers speak for themselves. Roberts, Queen, Peyton Wilson, I like that group on the inside. I think that Queen's going to get better. And then the secondary, I think these additions have been very helpful. Bob, very, very helpful.
Well, I think, look at Deshaun Elliott making plays. Number 25, you mentioned Artie Burns. I had a flashback. Oh, that's Artie Burns. No, it's not Artie Burns. He never did that. It was a safety right, blitz, exactly. And he got a third and one for a four-yard loss. That number 25 came at you. They brought in even more reinforcements with Terrell Edmonds down the road if necessary. And I think part of their planning when they have veterans they like in certain positions is bring them in, put them on the practice squad, and if we need be, it's almost like a taxi squad. We're going to dress you if we need you. Because you're a veteran, we know what you can. They also have Cam Sutton waiting to come in after his suspension is served. So they have some reinforcements on the way. So their defense should be consistently good all year, I agree.
And when TJ Watt is healthy and at the top of his game, I've said this before and I'd like to say it again, Bob, if you'll allow me. I think he's the most valuable and impactful player outside of quarterbacks in the entire NFL. He just ruins games for people. He does. Even when he's not making spectacular plays because of what they have to do to account for him.
It's almost like when you're a good cornerback, people shy away from your side of the field.
Yes.
Well, when they run the football, they don't want to go with TJ because he's underrated as a run stopper. He's really good at it, and he can do that as well as, attack the quarterback on a blitz or on a, whatever they're doing. So the bottom line is, yes, he is, but there are a lot of guys who have that same gene. I was watching Aiden Hutchinson yesterday in Detroit. He had almost five sacks in this game alone.
Yeah.
He's the same kind of player. But you try to stay away from those players. You cannot go in there.
It affects the whole game. He's unbelievable. And then he drops into coverage every once in a while and is liable to make a game-changing play when he's doing that. So the moral of this story, Bob, and it's wonderful to see you, by the way.
You as well, Joe. It's always a pleasure to see your countenance.
My countenance. I like that. And City Limits, how can you not like seeing him? He's the happiest man on earth. I call him the human hummingbird. That's what he does all day. Just hovers and hums and smiles.
Wow, look at that.
Hi, Bob.
Such a youthful look, too.
What a wonderful man he is. The moral of the story, is the mission of this season for the Steelers is to help that defense before they all get too old and it's too late, or they're too, A, pray for good health, and B, help them.
Yeah.
And I think in these first two games, at times they have, like, the best friends, the best friend of any defense is an offense that scores points.
And possesses the football to keep them fresh, which...
Well, that's a bonus. But if you're scoring 30 a game, I don't care if you do that in 2 seconds. That's your best friend. In lieu of that, yeah, keeping the football, which the Steelers did in the first half yesterday and in the second half the week before. It's keeping the football, which keeps your defense fresh and not making turnovers. But if that's all there is, like lauding Justin Fields for not making turnovers, that's not enough. And for the 8 trillionth time on this show, the Steelers, Art Rooney, Mike Tomlin told the world for the first time with Tomlin last year that just winning ugly is not good enough. It's not. He told the world when they fired Matt Canada, they were 6-4 that day, just like they always are. They're 6-4 forever. Good enough to make the playoffs, 2 games over .500. He fired Canada. They fired Canada. And the word from Tomlin, and it's a quote, was, I want to engineer victory more fluidly. That can be translated very easily, not a stretch, as saying just winning isn't good enough. When you fire a guy and you tell the world, quote, I want to engineer victory more fluidly. So winning isn't good enough. And it's not. And we all know that. And that gets to this second idea, Bob. And now in some people's opinions, we're going to go all negative. I call it realistic, and I call it based on history, is that this isn't going to cut it. This is not going to cut it. We've seen this before. That's why people watch this and they say, I don't know. I don't know about this. I've seen this movie before. And then all, you know, other fans and media people will jump on them and say, why are you so negative? They won 2 road games. They're in first place. Look at the other teams in the division. And the easy and obviously and historically justified answer is because we've seen this before and it ain't going to work long term. When they were 11-0 a couple years ago, we saw how their play was declining and we said, this is not going to translate. It's not. This is smoke and mirrors, 11-0. And what'd they do? Went on an epic losing streak, including maybe the most embarrassing playoff loss in history. And then since then, we've seen early season dominant defense and everybody getting excited. And then they're winning these ugly games as the season moves along. We say, this is not going to get it done. And you know what? We're right. We're right. And our skepticism is very, very well earned. Kenny Pickett might have won those 2 games. Would they be 2-0 with Kenny Pickett?
If he didn't throw turnovers in a tight game, but he might have. But yeah, that absolutely. Any quarterback should win that kind of game. But you're right. Exactly right. That this is real. They know it. While you try to stress mistake-free football, you can't do it without having some down-the-field plays and success. Now, yesterday, Joe, I'm going to say that even though it appeared as if that was the case, they did make some down-the-field throws. Unfortunately,
they've made some.
And there were good throws by Justin Field, but penalties all over the place.
Bob,
flag
may
day,
I interrupt you
flag
for a moment?
Day. Yes.
Last year at this time, they had made some plays down the field, too. I think we might forget about that. They were they beat the Raiders in a game where they
Austin.
Had a 71-yard pass to Austin, yep. And Kenny wasn't making forget the San Francisco game. That was a disaster. But they won games early with defense. Their defense was scoring, but they had one more offensive touchdown through 2 games than they have this year.
But
one more offensive touchdown.
What you just said there is throughout the San Francisco game. That's the kind of game that they're in trouble, you know, I think. They have to be able to counter-punch offenses' touchdowns. You cannot do it. And you knew in that San Francisco game they were not capable of doing it. And against better teams, it's difficult for them to do. That's what's got to change.
Yes. And listen, I want to be very clear about this. I respect Mike Tomlin's ability to get in these types of ugly games and win them. It's not easy to win them in the NFL, but he wins most of them. But again, the skepticism of how that translates to winning games that matter against good teams is very well earned. It's very well earned. You think you're going to bog down Mahomes or Josh Allen or name a quarterback in an ugly 13-9 game?
Maybe even week with Herbert coming into town.
Maybe, although I saw where he was hurt. Did he see it at the end of the game?
Yeah, he got his leg rolled up.
It does. It's not translatable. You know, I've seen some NBA teams. That was the sport that came to mind for me today. Be really good defensively, but at some point you got to score. At some point you have to have a go. Forget the NBA. It's pit basketball. It's pit basketball from even their heyday. When we would all watch and love the games in the regular season against UConn and Syracuse, but we knew when it came time to winning big games against great teams, their offense wasn't elite enough, not nearly. They didn't have that guy. And I don't know if the Steelers do either. So, yeah, in some ways it's enjoyable. It's definitely commendable. But the people who believe it's not translatable, they're the ones with the argument on their side right now.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. You made another point earlier about the veterans on the defense getting older. Their window for winning is getting closer to ending. It's very similar to the Penguins in that regard, too. They have the same kind of problem in that they have guys there who've been there. They know how to win. And it's different in the sense that they've won cups. But for this year and last year and next year, those guys need help, just as this defense needs help. They got to get it from an offense that should be able to do more than it's doing. Now, we'll see in the coming weeks what that's going to look like. But so far, they won. 2-0 is good. And I'll agree with you. It's not easy to win on the road in the NFL. I don't care who you play. It's a physical game. There are a lot of things that could work against you. You come away with those wins. First time, I think, in 25 years they started away 2-0. So that's something to build on.
And the first time in a lot of years, and only the second time under Harbaugh, the Ravens are 0-2.
And I don't think they've ever gone to the playoffs starting 0-2.
I'm not sure about that, but it's proven that that's a very tough thing.
But Jim Harbaugh's 2-0, and he's coming to town.
Yeah, let's talk about now the quarterback coming up here. What we thought of the Justin Fields performance, what we think about this moving forward. As I always say, we'll know the Steelers have reached a better place when the quarterback captain they send out for the coin toss is actually a guy who plays. 2 years ago, by the end of the year, it was Mitch Trubisky, your backup quarterback, going out to take the coin toss as a captain. Last year, by the end of the year, it was your disgruntled backup quarterback, Kenny Pickett, going out to midfield for the coin toss. And this year, yesterday, you're sending out Russell Wilson, and he's getting a game ball. And I realize he's hurt, but he could also be your backup quarterback. We don't know about that next. Let's talk about that next. 412-928-9370. It seems to be a fan reaction, at least based on, you know, social media and anecdotally, that split along the lines of, why are you people complaining about a 2-0 start when we're in first place and these other teams in the AFC North are struggling, versus because we've seen this movie before and we know it doesn't translate to the biggest games? So it's really hard to be in a celebratory mood.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
I have the inkling that this could be a championship-level defense. I need to see a little more, see him against good teams, but come on, we know the pedigree of the majority of the guys on that defense, right? I think it might be a championship-level defense, and I want to see whether or not the Steelers can provide it enough help. And Bob, when I think about reasons why this team could actually finally win a playoff game, I love Rachel Ray, don't you? What's she doing up there?
I don't know.
Do you
it
like
was
her?
Over my shoulder.
Yeah.
I love cooking shows. I could watch
so
them.
So do I.
I always tell my wife, I says, my wife's a great cook, as her mother was. And I basically watch. I don't do much. But as I get older, I want to really get in there and start doing stuff myself, trying to figure out.
It's fun.
And experiment.
I cook at home. Yeah,
I know
cook.
You do. And I want to experiment with stuff because I want to see how these people come up with some of these recipes.
It's
it has to be trial and error, some of it.
She's very believable to me. Anyway, that was a quick aside. The mission of this season is to help this defense. Come on. Come on. How many years? And it starts with the quarterback, and that's where we go here, Bob. 412-928-9370. Need to hear from you today because I see the fan base as split between those who are outraged that anybody is complaining about a 2-0 start versus those saying, we've seen these kinds of games before and they're not going to translate. They're just not against good teams in big games and to actually winning a playoff game. Defense going to get worn down after a while from carrying the load, injury bound to set in at some point, et cetera, et cetera. And quite frankly, they have the more powerful argument right now than the nothing to see here. We're 2-0 and the Ravens are 0-2 and so are the Bengals people. They have the better argument. And I lean toward them for the moment, but I do see possibly a championship level defense here, Bob.
I don't think there's any question. They've invested in it heavily. They've put in a ton of money into some of their best players. They brought in Patrick Queen at 3 years, $42 million to add to what they already had with Minka's big contract, TJ's big contract. Cam just got a new contract. Highsmith got a lot of money. And there are going to be more to come. But they haven't necessarily invested all that much in this offense for a lot of reasons. And I think still one of the problems that are going to have to be answered here is what they do when people do clamp down on George Pickens.
Yeah.
We haven't seen any really minuscule contributions. And that's mostly, I think, Justin Fields kind of zeroes in on Pickens quite a bit, with good reason. He's a special player. But other guys have got to get more involved in this, and they have to scheme George Pickens open more because he's going to face all the top coverage, as he did yesterday. And I thought he was a mismatch for Patrick Surtain, which I didn't see coming necessarily. So these are all challenges for the offense. Offensive line still got to get better. And I think yesterday in the second half, Joe, you mentioned the disparity in halves. They couldn't do anything. You know, they couldn't move people. As a result, there were no yards. And they
classic
were 0-for-7 on third down.
Classic case of the offense almost ruining a great defensive performance, putting the defense in a bad position, especially in Denver. In Denver, on a hot day, so you have the altitude, you have the heat, you have everything else. What you need to do on offense is protect your defense in the second half by at least holding the ball a little bit. Instead, they get 3 first downs and 62 yards in the entire second half. That's a classic case of harming your own defense and almost costing yourselves a game. Having said that, let's talk about Justin Fields. In the first half, he wasn't good. He was great in the first half. And if it weren't for the Jones disaster that we're going to talk about with a quote at the top of the hour to your own Richie Walsh, if it weren't for that, this dude finishes the first half with a 99-yard touchdown run. One of the best plays you'll see all season in the NFL, the on-the-run dart to Pickens right over the corner's head on the right sideline. He was great in the first half. He did nothing in the second half. So how do we grade out Justin Fields? I mean, in the first half, he had people like Damian Lillard tweeting out, oh, I think I know what the problem was with Justin Fields in Chicago, and it wasn't him. Well, I don't know about that. So what do we make of his performance yesterday and of how he's doing in his run at the top job, in how hard he might or might not be making it for Mike Tomlin to go to Russell Wilson when Wilson is healthy? Where does all that stand,
well,
do you think?
For me, it's about just winning first and foremost. Mike Tomlin strikes me as someone who, if things are going well, he's going to stick to it. It happened last year with Mason Rudolph. It led to what, you know, eventually led to the departure of Kenny Pickett. But you still need to do more. I thought I think he's best suited to roll out throw. He has shown he has this ability to throw on the run, moving pockets, do things. And that doesn't mean it has to be all the time, but you need to make it more available to him because I think a defense is more challenged to follow him. And if there's nothing open as he's doing that, then he can always tuck it away. And we saw again yesterday in that one run that was a potential sack. He turned into 16 yards, part of that 78-yard drive.
Yes.
He can do that. He did it last week in Atlanta. I would give him more freedom to roll and throw. That's just me because I think he's best suited for that. Sitting in the pocket sometimes, I'm not sure if that's his best asset, and it has to be still developed. So,
well, let me ask you this. He was, in the second half, he was 3-for-8 for 16 yards and ran for for 1 yard on 4 attempts. The offense disintegrated. I mean, that was Matt Canada stuff. Let me phrase the question to you this way. Going into last week's game against Atlanta, if you had a meter in front of you, 1 to 5, okay? Justin Fields was starting with the little dot on the meter at 3, okay? Mm-hmm. 5 would be he's moving toward replacing Russell Wilson. Going back toward 1 would mean that this is not going well, and of course Wilson's going to get his job back. So you start at 3 going into the Atlanta game. How close to 5 or to 1 are we? Where's that little dot right now, Bob?
It's still a 3 for
me. Is it?
It has to be, because the first half took it to 4.5. The second half brought it back to 1.5. So it's back to where it was. And I only have that to go on. That's the only thing we've seen since that game is this game. And that game had a great first half, not so great second half. Now, again, we also had a center, botched snap that could have been disastrous. These are 3 and 2 games counting preseason. You got to iron that stuff out. So I think he's still developing. I still think he needs help in that regard. I would like to see more scheming to get people open. I would like to see the middle of the field more. Okay, you look at the chart from yesterday. While there were indications, there was a slant to George Pickens. There was a slant to Austin. Still very, very infrequently used in the middle of the field.
Great touchdown throw to Mount Washington. That was a great throw.
It was. But I'm glad to see you. That's what I'm talking about, using somebody different in those
and
situations.
And Freiermuth got involved.
But you have to use more of that part of the field. And I think against good teams, you're going to have to be forced to do it and figure out ways to get guys through. So
you're still at a 3. There's two ways to look at the question, where I think that meter should be and where I think it actually is. I think Mike Tomlin is quite enamored with Justin Fields. And he may have seen enough over these games between the plays that were made against Atlanta and the first half yesterday to where I think that might be moving to 3.5, 4 in Mike Tomlin's mind. I think he's very much in love with the idea of having a running quarterback, of having a guy who can make first downs with his legs, of the potential of long drives and third down conversion rate, which was good in the first week. Great in the first half yesterday, horrible in the second half. I think Mike Tomlin may have seen enough now to push that thing toward a 4. And we hear from Jerry Dulac that Justin's going to get another start next week. Now, I would say he needs to be better if he's going to prevent Wilson from starting the week after that. Let's phrase the question this way. If he continues to play the same, they beat the Chargers, 11-2. but he's 3-0. Is he automatically in for game 4? Even if the offense stalls like it did?
If they continue to win, I got a feeling he's going to be in there. I still do.
Really?
Unless he throws 3 picks and somehow the defense bails him out all 3 times. I mean, it has to be performance-based.
Yeah.
Because I still think Russell Wilson was brought here to be the guy who knows what he's doing going down the field, but also is the guy who doesn't make too many mistakes. He's one of the least intercepted quarterbacks.
I'm so curious to see him play.
I am too.
Are we ever going to see him play in a Steeler uniform? Do you think he's going to start a game?
Just as I would answer that. Yes. As I would answer that question preseason, would Justin Fields play? The answer for me was yes. I didn't know the circumstances.
What if Fields puts 2 halves together against the Chargers like this first half yesterday? There's zero chance Wilson will be in.
This is a long season. 17 games will dictate change. I mean, you're going to have games that are not going to be anywhere near what they need to be in at that point. We saw it last year when Pickett came in for Trubisky. Was it last year? I can't remember the year. Or no, his first year.
Yeah.
He didn't wait around. He wanted to make a change. I think it will go that way, sort of game to game. I don't think, QB1 on the depth chart is going to remain the same. It's going to say Russell Wilson. So you can read into that whatever you want. But
it still doesn't look like, obviously, in some ways, like I would want an explosive offense to look. And Tomlin told Aditi, I think, before the game yesterday, we need to have more explosion in our offense. It looks like a good running game dedicated to the run. At times they can eat up a lot of clock, combined with a shot every once in a while. Like a spectacular big play from Fields and Pickens. I don't know that gets you there. It doesn't look like, we see one play like that. We're like, oh my God, the best offenses make 3 of those on a drive. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or 2 of those on a drive. It doesn't yet look anything like a big play, explosive, real NFL offense that could pop 30 on the Chiefs in a playoff game if need be. Do you know what I mean, Bob?
Yes, and that's a concern. It still is a concern. You can win all you want this way, but ultimately when you go against the big offensive teams in the NFL, you're going to have to match them drive for drive, point for point. And can you answer that question right now and say the Steelers are capable? I don't know that I can. I want to see more evidence before I can say that. At this point, they look a lot like what they've been doing over the last several years.
Where do we put blame on the con artist here? And was his biggest trick fooling us into thinking Brandon Ayuk was coming here?
Well, listen.
Was his biggest trick making the Steelers receiving core disappear behind George Pickens? Because this is, as you mentioned at the top, this is becoming a glaring issue. Glaring.
It really is. And you will be exposed in time. You can't have this kind of stuff going on. So they've kind of boxed themselves into a corner unless they make some sort of trade to free up somebody who may want out a better type of number two receiver. I mean, that still exists. The trade deadline is something you would have to watch because Omar Khan has done things a little differently under his watch. So if they still
I hear Deontay Johnson might be available after their first two games.
Oh, they are bad. They are really bad. They can't do anything over there. And you know, a lot of people say, well, Deontay Johnson, they should have kept him, could have used him if that was in case, you know, the true situation. You used him in a trade to acquire Ayuk. You know, I don't know if that's a good. What they got back was a player who I thought made me wonder why Carolina was willing to release him, you know, and they were. Dante Jackson looks like a pretty good guy. If you look at his history, he's made big plays in bigger games.
Yeah.
And they needed someone over there, too. So I understood that. But we'll see. I think it's an unwritten story about who will be the number two if there's another receiver coming in, but it will require a trade, and they may make one.
So all of that being said, if the meter started out on a 3 with Justin Fields heading into game 1, right in the middle, 1-5, it's 3 because it's neutral. Nothing's happened yet. Moving toward 5 is he is absolutely replacing Russell Wilson, even when Wilson's healthy. Or moving back toward 1, there's no chance this guy's going to start when Wilson is healthy. Bob says the meter's still at 3, Wonder Twin. I say the meter is moving toward 4 because I'm trying to think the way Mike Tomlin thinks. I think it's at least trending a little bit in the positive direction because they've won and because he's made some winning plays. You?
I do as well, but it felt like they put the training wheels back on in the second half and they wanted Justin Fields not to lose that game more so than win it. As explosive as they were being with the offense that was negated by penalties so much in the first half. So that does make me wonder if still in the back of Tomlin's mind, and he's communicating with Arthur Smith, we got to make sure that this guy does not turn the football over. And to Fields' credit, he has not in 2 games.
Yeah, I mean.
But that can't be the only badge of honor you have here.
No, that's Kenny Pickett.
If that's how it's going to be, you have to not only do that, but you got to move this offense and score and have passing
agree?
Touchdowns.
So yes, do
I,
we
it's
agree?
A 3. They'd it's be, still a 3.
Do we agree they'd be 2-0 if last year's Kenny Pickett was the quarterback?
No, I think they'd lose one of the games.
Interesting. Bob?
Well, as I said, I think there would have been a mistake or two in there, too. And again, you know, the stress factor is here. Don't turn the ball over. Listen, the numbers, and you're right, Mike Tomlin knows how to play this game. And they've done it better than any team in the NFL, one score wins over the last 5 years. So, but when you play this way, you also invite the opposition to remain hanging around. We've seen too many examples
exactly.
of fourth quarter comebacks
yes.
in the NFL. There's a ton of them every week. And here, you know, if you do that, Denver, for example, still was alive in that game. The way they played the first half, there is no way they should have been an onside kick away from potentially tying the game.
Give Justin
and by
Fields.
The way, what is Sean Payton doing there? Not trying an onside kick?
Not only that, on the previous series, you either have to kick the field goal earlier in the series or go for the touchdown on 4th and 6 because you let that much time
right.
waste away. Best case scenario, other than a miracle turnover, is to get the ball back with less than 10 seconds left needing a miracle touchdown. You might as well go for the touchdown right then.
Right.
And then hope. Just
this,
hope you get a field
idea,
goal
I'm going to survive and just keep it. Well, you boxed yourself in. You have
no
choice.
I love watching him fail.
And his explanation
really
was rotten, actually. I listened to it. I'm like, come on now.
He did a great job of kicking the field goal at a two-possession game to remain a two-possession game.
That's
in the
what I told
quarter.
Hoke about. I said, Chris,
what was he doing there?
You're turning a two-possession game into a two-possession
right,
game. You've
exactly.
done nothing.
Yeah, you've
so
done
what?
Nothing.
So what? You've eliminated the chance of being shut out. So what?
He's getting $18 million a year. He said when he came in there that the previous coach, Nathaniel Kent Hackett, had done one of the worst, him and his staff had done one of the worst coaching jobs in the history of the league. Well, Hackett was 4-11. Peyton's now 8-11, but he's 0-2 this year, and he's staring very hard at 0-4, because guess who they play next week? On the road at Tampa, on the road at the Jets. And at that point, he's going to wind up being, what, 8-13. So he will have won 8 out of his first 21 games. His quarterback looks like a bust to
me. He looked bad.
He stinks.
If Justin Fields is a 3 right now, Bo Nix has to be a 1.
Well, Bo Nix is a rookie, too. I think you got to give that
time to percolate here. Even Ben's first game against Baltimore when he got thrown in was a disaster, but there were some plays where he said, oh, my God, this guy, I can't wait to watch him. Bo Nix stinks. He sacked himself twice, Bob. Did you see him sack himself?
First of all,
I thought Peyton Manning was the only Broncos quarterback who sacked himself.
T.J. Watt barely got a hand on him. He went down.
Same with Highsmith.
Highsmith got less than a hand on him and he went down. I don't know about that. That was bizarre.
I think Sean Payton's the most unlikable coach in the NFL, and I want to see him fail miserably, and I want to see the Broncos have to eat that contract the same way they ate Russell Wilson's. I want to see them paying Sean Payton to coach another team in 2 years.
While Russell Wilson's being paid to be a quarterback. The whole Denver.
They'll be bankrolling the entire NFL.
So Chris and I had a dispute about whether or not that decision to move on from Russell, he thinks it's ownership. I said, no way, it's Sean Payton.
Oh, Sean.
There's no way Sean Payton was given authority to do everything. That was all Sean Payton, how he handled him in-game last year.
He hated Russell Wilson from the day he arrived, when he made public comments about his so-called entourage, saying, oh, that's not going to happen under me. Tough guy, Sean Payton. He humiliated Wilson on the sidelines by yelling in his face on the sidelines and making a scene of it. I don't think Mike Tomlin has ever done that. Did he ever do that to Ben? Never. You ever see Tomlin up in Ben's face yelling? There's a certain level of respect you have to have for a Hall of Fame quarterback who's done the things that those guys have done.
It makes no sense to me how he, and it was all him. I'm sorry. I disagree with Chris on it. He thought the ownership had to sign off on it, sure. But it was the man who was triggering all this was Sean Payton.
Hokie made a good point on your show yesterday. He said Justin Fields is a much better, you made this today too, Bob, when he's rolling out a much better quarterback, mm-hmm. when he's on the run. Second half, they tried to do too much pocket passing. That doesn't seem to fit his personality. I do agree, but did Fields also play a little bit conservatively? Because I don't think, it's not like all his runs are designed. Some of them are. But I thought that he didn't do a great job of moving around in the pocket or maybe taking off for some runs too in the second half.
Well, that's the difference there. He almost didn't seem like he was interested in running. And again, if you go back to the Atlanta game, the running really was a big asset in converting third downs. Their third down efficiency was good because two specific runs that he made on third down and 5 and 7 turned into first down. So, you know, that's a weapon that he has, and he should be encouraged to use it when he has the opportunity, not to overuse it.
What's your grade on Fields for yesterday?
I would say B.
Wow.
They won the game, and he didn't make a mistake, and he threw a touchdown pass.
Wonder Twin?
B minus. First half was an A. And especially some of those plays that got negated by penalties, where the throw to Pickens was ridiculous. But a B minus, because the second half was a C, if that.
The second half was close
terrible.
The only thing that keeps it from an F is that he didn't make a turnover, but the second half was a D minus. The first half was an A. So how does that grade out?
Probably a C or B minus.
Yeah, a C or a B. It's like the old meter that I presented to you earlier, Bob, where you start on a 3 and either move toward a 5 or back toward a 1. I start every player at a C going into the game. You have a 2.0 grade point average. Are you going to raise that toward an A? He was an A in the first half. He was great in the first half. Touch passes, fastballs, broken plays. He was great. But the second half, an A. Maybe an A+. What's an A+ and a D-? Can you figure that out? You go back from the A+ and up from the D-. You go up, you go back from the A+ limits and we'll meet in the middle. You ready? We'll do it verbally.
Yes.
All right. You have an A+. I have a D-. I go down to a D.
I go down to an A.
I go down to a C-.
I go down to an A-.
I go down to a C.
But you're going up, but I go down to a B+.
What did I do?
I go to a D plus.
Yeah.
I go to a B.
I go to a C-.
I go to a B-.
I go to a C. So
I go to a C+.
It's a C.
It's a C.
Bob, did you like that exercise?
I didn't understand any of it.
That was so much harder than it should have been.
That stupid meter was going backwards, frontwards, back and forth.
I can't ever figure that out with grades. I can't. I used to teach at Waynesburg where you went, and I would try to figure out what is this kid's grade? What's his grade?
How about this, Bob? Did you know that as soon as I arrived at Waynesburg, Starkey decided to stop teaching there?
I think he had the advanced scouting report on you.
He knew what was coming.
What was my reputation there?
Very high standards for Mr. Starkey's class.
And we made it fun.
That is what I heard, yes. That's why I was so enamored to take the class. I was pitched on, you'll be able to take a class with Mr. Starkey. Now I get it every day.
Look at that. Learning on the job, there's nothing better.
Foreshadowing.
We played tinfoil hockey one day, Bob, in the class.
All that tuition money going to this. You're charging people that much to play tinfoil hockey and parents
it was unbelievable.
Jesus.
What you do is underneath the chair was a goal for the little tinfoil ball, and you hit the ball at each other, and then you do breakaways on the goalie. I thought it was instructive and fun.
What did you learn from that, City Limits?
He wasn't
that in I'd rather have paper football played.
You know who was in my class, Bob?
Hmm.
Bill Hillgrove's grandson, Jack.
Jack's a very talented young man. Yes, he is.
And he remembers the first day of class. I didn't say anything to the class. Turned off the lights. Turned Bob McAdoo highlight film from his Buffalo Braves day. That was it for day one.
Again, tuition money going right down the drain. Hockey and Bob McAdoo, and I'm paying for this?
What are we learning
I'm calling the chancellor.
Hold on a second here. What you're learning is it's sports writing, how important the history of the game is. And we start with Bob McAdoo.
Yeah, and you know we don't have? Video of Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game. Did it really happen?
Oh, it happened.
Oh, no. Not another conspiracy theory. What do you mean, did it happen?
There's no footage of Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game. There's
Ernie
footage
of
things
was
in
there,
1900,
Bob.
Or in like 1910, there's footage.
Well,
Ernie
just because
was
there's
there.
No footage, I mean, we live in a world now everything's footaged. You know, there's... Well, come on. It happened.
Of course it did.
A former Starkey student just texted me giving you an A+ as a teacher.
Yeah, they had fun. And we learned
a lot. Fun is good. Yeah. I think that's a big component of it, especially coming from well-respected legendary figure like you.
And the key to it all...
That's why they raised tuition, because Joe Starkey had to get paid.
The key to it all, Bob, is to get their attention immediately, whether it's a social media age or back in 1940 when Ron started. You got to get their attention immediately. Whether you're doing a video or whether you're writing a story. And you know what my best lead of all time was?
Tell me.
Limits, you'll like this story. Tony Dorsett was in town much after his playing career. Love talking to Tony. But you know how sometimes you have these interviews that you only get because somebody's peddling a product?
Right.
Tony was peddling ED medication. So in addition to doing a story about what Dorsett thought of the Pitt program under Wal Harris, blah, 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 I was forced to write a little sidebar about why he was here. And you know what the lead was?
Tell me.
TD has ED. the greatest lead of all time. Would you agree, Limits?
I think I've actually heard that one, and somebody's brought that up to me in class.
It was legendary.
As a lessons on how to write a lead.
It was legendary.
That's a good one. And it catches your attention right off the bat, sells his product. You do what you had to do to get the interview. Fine. All good.
All right. Coming up, one of the most amazing sequences, and I don't think I'm overstating this, that I've seen from the Steelers regarding one particular player. One of the most incredible negative sequences. It was unbelievable that he came into the game when he came in, that he stayed in the game, and that he was removed. He was removed in the middle of a series. The whole thing was just mangled beyond belief. And it started in the pregame when Jerry Dulac reported that Troy Fotanu and Broderick Jones would alternate at right tackle. Let's talk about this disaster. And the Broderick Jones situation